Welcome everybody to today's Krishna in Vrindavan Leela. We're reading from the Canto 10, Chapter 6, The Killing of the Demon Putana. So we're going to hear about Krishna's exciting pastime with Putana and his extreme mercy and how he gives liberation to Putana, which should be inspiring for us and encouraging for us in our own practice of devotional service. All right. So, can you also say Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 All right, so yesterday we left off with Nanda Maharaj going to Mathura to pay his taxes. And he paid the taxes, and then he met with Vasudev, who told him, you better get back to Vrindavan quickly because there might be some disturbances there. Just saying, right? Like that. Just saying. Okay, so then Nanda Maharaj is hurrying back to Vrindavan, and in the meantime, Kamsa sends Putana to Vrindavan. So I don't know if Kamsa knows that Nanda Maharaj is not there. A lot of the cowherd men went with Nanda Maharaj, so maybe he's thinking that it's a safer situation, that the king is not there, the head men are not there. It's a good time to attack. But he sent Putana. So that's what it says here. That text one, my dear king, while Nanda Maharaj was on the way home, he considered that what Vasudev had said could not be false or useless. There must have been some danger or disturbances in Gokul. As Nanda Maharaj thought about the danger for his beautiful son Krishna, he was afraid and he took shelter at the lotus feet of the Supreme Controller. So this is also instructed that Nanda Maharaj took shelter of the Lord in his fearfulness of prayed to the Lord for Krishna's protection. But Nanda Maharaj doesn't think that Krishna is the Lord, so he's praying to Lord Vishnu, Lord Narayan, for protection. And says here that while Nanda Maharaj was returning to Gokul, the same fierce Putana, whom Kamsa had previously engaged in killing babies, was wandering about in the towns, cities, and villages doing her nefarious duty. So then, yeah, also Nanda Maharaj was aware that this baby killing was going on. He was aware of the edict of Kamsa, and he was very concerned. But Jiva Goswami comments that all the babies that were killed by Putana, they were actually from sinful families. They were from the families of Kamsa's own supporters. So it's interesting how Krishna was actually engaging Putana in doing his work of killing the demons. And how Kamsa was so foolish that he was actually, you know, getting her to kill his own people, his own, you know, fan club. But Krishna, he's very expert in getting things done. So we'll see that too. Like when Jarasandha attacks, Krishna could have easily polished off Jarasandha, but he keeps him alive because Jarasandha keeps coming back with armies and, you know, like hundreds and thousands of demoniac soldiers. So like, okay, I don't need to go out and find these demons. Jarasandha is just going to bring them to me and I can just kill them. And then he'll go and bring more and I'll kill them. And that way I can just sit here happily in Mathura and just kill the demons when they come. So, yeah. All right. So then, Shukadeva Goswami is telling this story to Maharaj Parikshit, and he's thinking, well, Maharaj Parikshit is a devotee of Krishna. And so hearing that Krishna's there, his father's not around, this horrible witch Putana is going there to kill him, Parikshit might get worried. So to ease any anxiety that might come into Maharaj Parikshit's mind, Shukadeva Goswami speaks this verse. He says, my dear king, wherever people in any position perform their occupational duties of devotional service by chanting and hearing, there cannot be any danger from bad elements. Therefore, there was no need for anxiety about Gokul while the Supreme Personality of Godhead was personally present. So he's saying that you don't need to worry, everything's going to be okay. Because even wherever people hear and chant about Krishna, nothing bad can happen. And what to speak of, Krishna is personally present. So it's all going to be all right. You don't need to worry. Just sit there peacefully and let's hear the story. So then he starts, once upon a time. Once upon a time, Putana Rakshasi, who could move according to her desire and was wandering in outer space, converted herself by mystic power into a very beautiful woman and thus entered Gokul, the abode of Nanda Maharaj. So she was a Rakshasi. Rakshasas are cannibals. So not only was she killing babies, but she was eating them. And that comes up later. It says that she was, even with Krishna, she likes the taste of fresh baby's blood. And wow. Her plan was not just to kill Krishna, but to eat him.
Putana?
Yeah. I guess so. So yeah, so these Rakshasas, they're more powerful than human beings, and they have all these mystic powers that they know a lot of, especially black arts, and they know the art of shape-shifting. And she was a witch. So the female Rakshasis, many of them knew how to, you know, get a stick and fly on it. So this thing of, like, we hear about in fairy tales about witches riding on broomsticks, it's a real thing. Wow. They actually do that. So, and Putana knew how to do that, and she could travel not just, you know, in the Earth's atmosphere, but she could travel in outer space. So she got on her stick and she flew into Gokul. Yeah. And then there's this, so then she disguised herself, you know, she transformed herself. She, you know, morphed into a beautiful woman who was like a goddess. So the description is here: her hips were full, her breasts were large and firm, seeming to overburden her slim waist. Now pay attention to this description, because later there's going to be a very contrasting description of her. So for now, this is what she is. She was dressed very nicely. Her hair, adorned with a garland of Malika flowers, was scattered about her beautiful face. Her earrings were brilliant. And as she smiled very attractively, glancing upon everyone, her beauty drew the attention of all the inhabitants of Vraj, especially the men. When the gopis saw her, they thought that the beautiful goddess of fortune, holding a lotus flower in her hand, had come to see her husband. So at that time, you know, the household deity in Nanda Maharaj's place was Lord Narayan. They worshiped Lord Vishnu. So they thought this woman was so beautiful. Her beauty surpassed, and the Vrajvasis, you know, the gopis of Vrindavan, they were so beautiful. The elderly gopis were very beautiful. And but they had never seen anyone like this. This was just like next level beauty. And they thought she must be a demigoddess, or maybe even Lakshmi herself. So that was their conclusion, that this is Lakshmi Devi, the eternal consort of the Lord. And we're worshiping Lord Vishnu here in our household. And she's come to visit her husband, Lord Vishnu, here on our altar. So they thought, well, welcome her in, you know. So they ushered her right straight into the house, thinking, this is so wonderful. You know, first Krishna was born, we have this amazing son, and now the goddess of fortune is coming to bless the child. And so they were thinking that this was a very welcome guest. So, yeah, and it's explained that it was actually Yoga Maya's influence on the Vrajavasis, that they were totally unsuspecting of Putana. Yeah, it was Yoga Maya just bewildered them and put any thoughts of danger out of their minds, because Krishna wanted to kill the deity, and he came for the purpose of killing Pratranaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chaduskritam. That to annihilate the miscreants was one of his purposes in coming. So Putana was one of these miscreants that he wanted to annihilate, and he had a whole plan. He had his whole plan. So the Vrajvasis were under the influence of Yoga Maya, thinking, oh, what a beautiful woman. She's come to bless our child. Come right in, you know, and take him. And if you want to feed him milk from your breast, then we'll consider that your blessing upon him. And in those days, you know, like, something like a wet nurse was very common. You know, the women would have lots of children, and, you know, they would breastfeed each other's children. It wasn't something strange. It was something very ordinary.
That's healthy. That's like not. Oh yeah, people actually buy like breast milk.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a thing. So So the Vrajavasis were under Yoga Maya, and Putana was under Mahamaya, thinking that I'm going to actually kill this child. And she was walking into her own death trap that was arranged by Krishna. She thought she was going to trap and kill him, but she was the one that was going to get trapped and killed. So yeah, it says here that Lord Sri Krishna, the all-pervading super soul, so he's the all-pervading super soul, he totally knew her intention. He was lying on the bed, and he understood that Putana, a witch who was expert in killing small children, had come to kill him. Therefore, as if afraid of her, Krishna closed his eyes. The acharyas comment in different ways on why Krishna closed his eyes. So one was as if to make her think that he was afraid of her, so that she would have confidence to pick him up and put him on her lap and breastfeed him. Because it also says that Putana, she had a sense that this child is very powerful. This child could, you know, destroy the whole universe. But then, you know, Mahamaya then kicked in and was like, no, I'm going to finish him off. So he wanted to increase her confidence by just closing his eyes and being a little baby for her. Thus, so they say another reason that Krishna closed his eyes was because Putana was a woman, and also she had approached him in the mood of mother. So he thought it was a very abominable thing to, you know, kill a woman who came as mother, even though she had evil intentions, but still it was, you know, a sinful act, and he didn't want to see it. So he just closed his eyes. He didn't want to have to do it. And he thought, well, at least don't let me see it. And there are a few other reasons. Another one is that he didn't want to see the face of Putana, who had killed so many children. It's just like not somebody that you want to look in the eye. He is such an evil person. So then Putana, she just reached into the cradle and she picked up Krishna and put him on her lap. And of course, she had previously smeared the nipple of her breast with poison, like really, really super deadly poison that was enough to kill, you know, hundreds of elephants. And she thought for sure that as soon as he, you know, touches his lips to her nipple, he's just going to be finished. So it says, Putana took upon her lap him who was to be her own annihilation. Just as an unintelligent person places a sleeping snake on his lap, thinking the snake to be a rope. It's a nice analogy, right? She's thinking like a rope. You just put a rope on your lap. Like, that rope's not going to do anything. Like, this child can't possibly hurt him. He's just a tiny little baby. He's got his eyes closed. He doesn't even know what's going on. But yeah, it's going to be like the rope that became a snake and gave her the death bite. Putana Rakshasi's heart was fierce and cruel, but she looked like a very affectionate mother. Thus she resembled a sharp sword in a soft sheath. Although seeing her within the room, Rohini and Yashoda, overwhelmed by her beauty, did not stop her, but remained silent because she treated the child like a mother. So here, it says that she was a sharp sword in a soft sheath. So Putana's beauty was superficial. She was actually a demoniac Rakshasi. She wasn't really beautiful at all. And that was superficial. And also her intention was superficial, that she was coming there to, you know, lovingly feed Krishna milk, but actually she was going there to kill Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments that Putana represents the false guru. So the bogus guru who poses as a learned person, poses as somebody who can help you make spiritual advancement, but actually just wants to exploit you, just wants to get money or get service or be worshipped or like that. So later when it says that Krishna becomes angry, that's what he gets angry with. He's angry because he doesn't appreciate cheaters. So let's see here. On that very spot, the fiercely dangerous Rakshasi took Krishna on her lap and pushed her breast into his mouth. The nipple of her breast was smeared with a dangerous, immediately effective poison. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, becoming very angry at her, took hold of her breast, squeezed it very hard with both hands, and sucked out both the poison and her life. So yeah, so Krishna was angry because of her being a cheater. And we see in other pastimes this, that when Maharaj Prithu was performing his, he wanted to do 100 horse sacrifice, but then Indra kept coming and stealing the horse. And he was dressing up as a sannyasi to try to, you know, so that Prithu's son every time would go and, you know, pursue him and, you know, be just about to shoot him with an arrow. And then he would see, oh no, he's dressed as a sannyasi. He's a holy person. I can't possibly kill him. And then he would just, you know, let him go. And that kept happening again and again. And then finally, it was Brahma. Brahma intervened and he said, look, you know, whether you did 100 horse sacrifice or not, that's not the issue here. The issue is that Indra is pretending to be a sannyasi, and this cheating thing will be picked up by people in the future, and there'll be so many bogus gurus who will mislead people, and that's a worse sin. Like, so whatever you have, so just be happy with the 99 horses so that Indra will stop this pretense. And then also we were just studying in Bhakti Shastri about the Sri Shupanishad text 9, where it says that those who cultivate nescience are those who are just grossly ignorant and, you know, are not ashamed of being ignorant. And they go to the darkest regions of ignorance. But worse than them are those who profess to have so-called knowledge. So worse than just being totally, you know, ignorant is pretending that you have knowledge and deceiving people. So that's a very bad thing. And so Krishna, he didn't tolerate that. And then the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that I am the gambling of cheats. So Krishna always, when it comes to cheating, Krishna always has the last laugh. He always wins. Anyone who comes to cheat Krishna, they're going to get cheated. And that's exactly what happened to Putana, because she came to kill him and he killed her. So yeah, it says, unbearably pressed in every vital point, the demon Putana began to cry, please leave me, please leave me, suck my breast no longer. Perspiring, her eyes wide open and her arms and legs flailing, she cried very loudly again and again. So because the life airs, Krishna sucked out her life airs, and it says here, tat prana, I heard the prana. So in the body, there are all these, you know, these nadis or, you know, channels through which the prana flows, and they're connected to all the vital points. So when Krishna was sucking out her prana, it was pulling on these, it was putting pressure on the vital points. And it says here, unbearably pressed in every vital point. It's just like, you know, when you get marma therapy, they press on the certain points and it really hurts. It hurts like anything. So yeah, she was in intense pain, with all of her vital points being pressed, you know, like excruciatingly hard. And she's just screaming like, let me go with me, stop this. And she's, you know, thrashing her arms and legs about. And then Krishna's also kicking her with his feet. Of course, that's his mercy, because his touch of his lotus feet is purifying. But yeah, he's just like he kicked Kaliya in the heads to punish chastise Kaliya, so he's chastising Putana. Killed so many babies, now you came to kill me. Ugh, take that. Yeah, he's letting her have it.
They hurt so bad.
Little baby feet that big. As Putana screamed loudly and forcefully, the earth with its mountains and outer space with its planets trembled, because she was a huge witch. The lower planets in all directions vibrated, and people fell down, fearing that thunderbolts were falling upon them. So her screams, it was like they thought that there's like lightning was going to strike them, and they were like hitting the deck, you know, just like lying flat on the ground, like, it's going to be a, we're going to get hit. In this way, the demon Putana, very much aggrieved because her breast was being attacked by Krishna, lost her life. O King Parikshit, opening her mouth wide and spreading her arms, legs, and hair, she fell down in the pasturing ground in her original form of a Rakshasi, just as Vritrasura had fallen when killed by the thunderbolt of Indra. So this happens with these demons and Rakshasas who take particular, like, disguises, who change their form. for different nefarious purposes. So as soon as they're being attacked, they become weak and they can't, it takes a lot of energy for them to maintain that false form. So she was just, you know, losing her life and she was becoming weak and she couldn't maintain the disguise as a beautiful woman. So she manifests as her gigantic Putana body. Hare Krishna. So it says that body of Putana was 12 miles high. She was a giant. And when she fell, she broke. Well, first of all, when Krishna was sucking out her life, she went out of the house and she just started running. And that was also Krishna's arrangement. She was trying to get away from him, but she couldn't because he was just like, you know, like flapsed onto her. And but she ran, by Krishna's arrangement, she ran all the way out of the village because he didn't want her to fall and like crush anybody's homes or, you know, the goshala, hurt any cows. Yeah, he's still there. He's like, sucking away. Yeah, he's going for a ride. Krishna goes for a lot of rides by the grace of the demons. It's fun with them. Yeah, we're going to hear about Trinavarta tomorrow. So, yeah, so she runs all the way out of the village into the pasturing grounds, and then she just falls. And when she falls, she crushes the forests for 12 miles, and all those forests that she crushes are Kamsa's gardens. and because the distance between Vrindavan and Mayapur is Vrindavan and Mathura is like you know, roughly like 10 kilometers, so when she, like, the upper part of her body, like her head, lands right next to Kamsa's place. And so Kamsa's like, oh my god, I sent Putana there to kill Krishna, and now here she is lying dead at my doorstep, dead body. So the message to Kamsa is, you're next. Like, you don't stand a chance. So, yeah. Like, I mean, just like all those trees and crushing. And it's, Vishwanath Thakur says that they're mango trees. And so there's like, just land on the mango trees and there's juice everywhere and it's a big splat and a big mess. Yeah. Kamsa's garden gets destroyed. And then Kamsa's more fearful than ever because he was putting a lot of hope in these demons like Putana that they could actually just polish off Krishna and then he wouldn't have to worry. So now we're going to get the description of Putana Rakshasi. The Rakshasi's mouth was full of teeth, each resembling the front of a plow. They were that big, like plow spike things. Her nostrils were deep as mountain caves and her breasts resembling big slabs of stone fallen from a hill. Her scattered hair was the color of copper. The sockets of her eyes appeared like blind wells. Her fearful thighs resembled the banks of a river. Her arms, legs, and feet seemed like big bridges, and her abdomen like a dried up lake. The hearts, ears, and heads of the cowherd men and women were already shocked by the Rakshasi's screaming, and when they saw the fierce wonder of her body, they were even more frightened. So they were just like, whoa, this is really a lot. You know, first that crazy screaming, like there was a, you know, comets coming, like meteorites crashing down to earth along with lightning bolts and all these things. And now this huge 12 mile long mountainous dead body. And Krishna's there, like playing on her chest. That's what it says. Without fear, the child Krishna was playing on the upper portion of Putana Rakshasi's breast. And when the gopis saw the child's wonderful activities, they immediately came and with great jubilation picked him up. So then, yeah. And then the elderly gopis, because Mother Yashoda, she's like totally in a state of anxiety and shock. And Rohini also, because their affection for Krishna is so intense that seeing Krishna like that and just like, you know, all the astounding things that just happened to him, they couldn't do anything. They were just shocked and horrified and traumatized. So then the other elderly gopis, they get Krishna and then they start doing all these purificatory rituals with using cow products. So there's a cow there. They get the tail of the cow and they're like taking the tail of the cow and just brushing it you know, kind of like a chamara, is brushing it on all over his body.
And they took the veil off of
the cow. No, the cow's standing there.
Oh, I mean, so cute.
It's so cool. So there's cows all over. So they just bring a cow over and they're like, eh. Yeah, with the live cow's tail. And then they take dust that was raised by the hoofs of the cows. So places where the cows had walked, they pick up that dust and they smeared it all over him. And then they got cow dung and cow urine. They gave him a bath with cow urine, and they took cow dung and they put tilak in the 12 places, like we do, saying the same mantras that we do. So it's just amazing how they had so much faith in the cows, you know, like they were protecting the cows. We talk about cow protection, but the cows are also protecting them. You know, like all of the protection and all the purificatory rituals, they all involved cow things. And even they bathe in the cow urine. Yeah. So, and they considered that these cows are actually protecting Krishna. So, yeah, maybe we can, there are these really nice mantras that the cowherd women, even though they were Vaishyas and they were kind of like simple, you know, cowherd women, but they knew all these mantras and they knew the procedures for protecting children because they all had children. And so there are these nice mantras for protecting children. And I know Mother Sukada, she told me that from the time her son was born, she always chanted these mantras every day for her son's protection. And she told me that later her son, when his son had grown up and moved away from home, one day he called her up and he was like, "Mom, are you still chanting those mantras? Keep it up, I need it." So I'm going to say, there's just a few of them. I'm going to recite the Sanskrit here. And then what you can do is meditate on, if you know any child that needs to be, needs protection, you can meditate on the child and we can say these prayers. So, yeah. Okay. Avyada jongri mani mamstava janva tonu yagyo chitaka titatam jataram hayasya ritke shavastvat uru isha inastu kantam vishnur bhujam mukamuru krama ishvarakam Chakra gata sahagado hadir astu paschat tvat parshvayor danur asi madu hajanascha kone shushanka urugaya upayupendras takshyakshito haladara purusha samantat. So here's the translation for that one. May Aja protect your legs. May Mahiman protect your knees. Yagya, your thighs. Achyuta, the upper part of your waist. And Hayagriva, your abdomen. May Keshava protect your heart. Isha, your chest. The sun god, your neck. Vishnu, your arms. Urukrama, your face. And Ishvara, your head. May Chakri protect you from the front. May Sri Hari, Gadadhari, the carrier of the club, protect you from the back. And may the carrier of the bow, who is known as the enemy of Madhu, and Lord Ajana, the carrier of the sword, protect you, your two sides. May Lord Urugaya, the carrier of the conch shell, protect you from all corners. May Upendra protect you from above. May Garuda protect you on the ground. And may Lord Haladar, the Supreme Person, protect you on all sides. There's a few more. Indriyani Rishikesha Prananarayanovatu Svetadvipa Patishchittam Mano Yogeshvaro Vatu Krishnigarvas Tute Budhim Atmanam Bhagavan Paraha Kridantam Patu Govinda Shayanam Patu Madhavaha Rajantam Avyadvaikunta Asinam Tvam Shriya Patihi Unjanam Yagyabhuk Patu Sarvagraha Bhayankaraha. So those ones translated as, may Rishikesha protect your senses and Narayan your life air. May the master of Svetadvip protect the core of your heart. And may Lord Yogeshwara protect your mind. May Lord Krishnigarbha protect your intelligence and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, your soul. While you are playing, may Govinda protect you. And while you are sleeping, may Madhava protect you. May Lord Vaikuntha protect you while you are walking. And may Lord Narayan, the husband of the goddess of fortune, protect you while you are sitting. Similarly, may Lord Yajnabhuk, the fearful enemy of all evil planets, always protect you while you enjoy life. So those are the prayers that they chanted for the Lord's protection. And the next verse talks about all the different evil beings that actually attack children. So this may be interested to know. And it says the evil witches known as Dakinis, Yatudanis, and Kushmandas are the greatest enemies of children. And the evil spirits like Bhutas, Pretas, Pishachas, Yakshas, Rakshasas, and Vinayakas, as well as witches like Kotara, Revati, Jeshta, Putana, and Matrika, are always ready to give trouble to the body, the life air, and the senses, causing loss of memory, madness, and bad dreams. Like the most experienced evil stars, they all create great disturbances, especially for children. But one can vanquish them simply by uttering Lord Vishnu's name. For when Lord Vishnu's name resounds, all of them become afraid and go away. So all these names that the gopis were chanting, the elderly gopis who are friends of Mother Yashoda, are all different names of Vishnu. So they knew this fact, that when the names of Vishnu are chanted, then all these evil influences go away. And that's why Lord Chaitanya recommended Kirtaniya Sada Hari, because if we're always chanting, then these things can't touch us. Like we were studying in the Ishapanishad, Krishna Surya Sama, Maya Haya Andakara, Yahan Krishna, Tahan, Nahi Mayara Adhikar. Krishna is like the sun and Maya is like the darkness. And so whenever the sun of Krishna is shining in our hearts and minds, or his name is vibrating on our tongues, or we're serving him or hearing about him or chanting about him, then Maya just goes far away along with all these other evil influences. So we do the same thing, like in the morning, you know, when we put on tilak, it's a similar thing to what they're doing. They're taking the cow down tilak, and then Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha, Om Madhavaya Namaha, Om Govindaya Namaha, Om Vamanaya Namaha, Om Madhushudanaya Namaha, Om Trivikramaya Namaha, Om Vishnave Namaha, Om Sridharaya Namaha, Om Rishikeshaya Namaha, Om Padmanabhaya Namaha, Om Damodaraya Namaha, Om Vasudevaya Namaha. So we can remember, when we're putting on tilak in the morning, we can also remember these elderly gopis saying the mantras and putting the cow dung tilak on Krishna for his protection. And their love for Krishna is so, their vatsalya bhav, their mood of parental affection to Krishna is so strong that it overwhelms any sense that Krishna is God. So very sweet. And also, later in the Bhagavatam, in Canto 12, there's this famous verse that Shukadev says to Maharaj Parikshit, that kalir dosha nidhe rajan asti hyeko mahaguna kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sangha param brajat. That this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. It's kalo dosha nidya. Dosha means faults and nidhe means ocean. So this Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. But there's one good quality, eko maha guna. There's one good quality in this age. And that is that kirtanad eva krishnasya. That by chanting the holy names of Krishna, having Krishna kirtan, mukta sangha param brajat. That we can get free from all material attachments. Mukta, we can get liberated from this material world. And param brajat, we can go to the supreme abode of the Lord. So yeah, so the Braja, yeah, so it's really important to chant the holy names to protect ourselves here and to assure our going back to Godhead. All right, so then after that, the gopis and Mother Yashoda, she took Krishna, and I mean, she was so frazzled from the whole thing that she wasn't even sure whether Krishna was still alive. She was just so, you know, upset about the whole thing. She was like, is my child dead? Is he okay? So the gopis, they were trying to say, he's good, you know, he's fine. He was just playing there, you know. And so they put Krishna on her lap, and then they say, just give him some milk, you know, and you'll see. He'll suck your breast and you'll see that he's healthy and he still has an appetite and he's, you know, a hungry baby. Because with small children, appetite means health. So then they, Mother Yashoda breastfed Krishna, Krishna took milk, and then she was like, okay, he's alive, he's well, everything's good. So then she put him to bed. And then just then, Nandamaraj arrived. So this was all going on. Nandamaraj was not there. So Nandamaraj and the other cowherd men that went with him, they, you know, just walked into Vrindavan, into Gokul, and they saw this, because Putana was huge. She was like a mountain. It was like this 12-mile long mountain range. And they were looking around like, wait a minute, did we take a wrong turn somewhere? I thought this was Vrindavan. I thought we were going to be in Gokul. I thought we were going to be in our village now. Like, what happened? Did we get delirious from too much travel? Or, you know, they were really confused. And then the other, so some residents of Vrindavan saw them. They ran to them, you know, Nandamaraj, Nandamaraj, this is what happened. And they told the whole story. And Nandamaraj was just like, oh, Vasudev said there would be disturbances. He must be some great rishi to know the future like that. How could he possibly have known? Because Nandamaraj is like, he's just a simple cowherd man. Vasudev, he's a kshatriya. He's, you know, he knows about politics and he's a diplomat. So he knew that this is Kamsa's intention and he's bound to cause trouble to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. So he knew it wasn't, he didn't have mystic powers, but Nandaraj's mind is like, wow, he must really have some powers to foretell the future like that. How could he have foreseen this calamity and even predicted it to me? So, yeah, that's the difference between.
The gopis had just watched Krishna suck the life out of Putana's breath, and then they're like, let him drink your milk till you show it, right?
That's what they're like. They immediately forget. Any time when Krishna exhibits some kind of power or opulence, they just like, it doesn't register in their minds. You know, it's just like, Krishna. Yeah, they just think it must have been Lord Vishnu that intervened and protected him. That's it. They're always like that. Lord Vishnu is always saving him. So then they got these, you know, people in Gokul who would clean the street and take out the garbage and stuff. So they got them to come and to cut Putana's body into so many pieces and burn it up, because they were afraid that she was this witch with mystic power. She was going to come back and come to life again and attack Krishna again. So they cut her all up into little pieces and they set fire to her body. And then it's described how when her body was burning, it produced a beautiful, like a very pleasing fragrance, like incense. Yeah, because Krishna had touched her with his lotus feet. And by that touch, she had become completely purified of all sins, of all, you know, bad contamination. And then because she'd been killed by Krishna, then she got liberated, because any, you know, Krishna has that quality that any demons that he kills get liberated. But then Krishna, not only that, but Krishna gave her a very special kind of liberation, that because she approached him with a mood of mother, and because just before she picked him up and, you know, offered him her poisonous breast, she thought, wow, he's so beautiful and he's so powerful. She had those two thoughts. He's beautiful and he's powerful. And Krishna accepted that as praise, that mentally she praised him as being the beautiful, all-powerful Lord. And also she was approaching him in a giving mood. She was offering her breast milk from her own body. And she was cuddling it, because she didn't just go in there and be like, give me that baby and pull him out of the cradle. And, you know, she went very lovingly. You know, it wasn't just that she looked like a demigoddess. She acted like one. She was very gentle. She was very sweet and respectful and sensitive to everybody's feelings. And, you know, so she was, she came in what looked like a nice mood. So it just shows how Krishna, he has this amazing character, you know, where he overlooks the faults. And even though the faults may be humongous, you know, just like, you know, 99.99% faults, he overlooks that and he accepts the, you know, 0.001% of good qualities. So he accepted that she came very gently. She picked me up so sweetly and gently, and she offered me her milk in the mood of a mother, and she appreciated my power and my beauty. Therefore, she's, you know, she deserves to go back to Godhead. So she didn't just get Brahmajyoti liberation, which is what most of the demons get, but she actually went to the spiritual world, to Goloka Vrindavan, and she became a nurse, one of Krishna's nurses. But it said that she wasn't quite on the level of the other, you know, nurses there that were, you know, Nitisiddhas or who were, you know, actual, you know, devotees, pure devotees who went back to Godhead, because she had a mixed mood of reverence. So she was kind of like a little a background nurse. But anyway, she was there, you know, she's in the spiritual world with Krishna. She had it made, basically. So this is, you know, all the Shukadeva Goswami really elaborates on this idea that, you know, Putana was always hankering for the blood of human children. And with that desire, she came to kill Krishna. But because she offered her breast to the Lord, she attained the greatest achievement. What then is to be said of those who have natural devotion and affection for Krishna as mothers and who offered him their breast to suck or offered something very dear as a mother offers something to a child? So then what to speak of, you know, the actual devotees of Krishna? And he says also, because Krishna embraced Putana's body and with great pleasure, Krishna embraced Putana's body with great pleasure because he was actually very happy to kill her. So he actually enjoyed that and sucked her breast. Although she was a great witch, she attained the position of mother in the transcendental world and thus achieved the highest perfection. What then is to be said of the cows whose nipples Krishna sucked with great pleasure and who offered their milk very jubilantly with affection, exactly like that of a mother? So we could also say, what to speak of, you know, us, although we're not pure devotees, we maybe have some material desires, we still have lust and envy and greed and things, but we're trying to make an offering to Krishna, you know, like we cook and we offer food to Krishna and we do service, we offer that to Krishna, we chant our japa for the pleasure of Krishna. So even if there's some fault, you know, even if sometimes our japa is inattentive, even though our offerings may not be completely pure, our minds may not be completely pure even while we're offering it, but Krishna overlooks that and he is very kind and he accepts, you know, our service. He very happily accepts our service. He eagerly accepts our service because he wants to reciprocate with us. And these verses about Putana, I think it's Uddhava who says this. Is it Uddhava?
Yeah.
Third canto? Yes, there's this very famous verse from the third canto. Aho bakiyam stanakalakutam jigam shaya payayad apyasadvi lebhe gatim dachuchitam tatonyam kambadayalum sharanam brajima. It says, alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of nurse to a she-demon, Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast. So it's like, how can we find anyone more merciful than that? You know, and also these verses here, these verses from the Bhagavatam about how Putana was given liberation. Those were the verses that when Vyasadeva went to get Shukadeva himself, when he was wandering off, you know, in his impersonal, you know, conception of life to go live in the forest, then Srila Vyasadeva sent some servants, some of his disciples there to try to bring him back. And he said, chant these verses about Putana. And when he heard those verses, he's like, hey, whoa, that sounds pretty amazing. Let me find more about that. And he went back and he studied the Bhagavatam with Srila Vyasadeva. And also when Gadadhar Pandit went to meet Pundarik Vidyanidhi, and he was thinking that Pundarik Vidyanidhi is a materialist because he's like living this like lavish lifestyle and all this stuff. Then who was it that went with him? Jagannanda Pandit told him, just recite this verse. So he recited this verse about, it was this one. And Pundarik Vidyanidhi just went to ecstasy and started like, just like, you know, manifesting all these, anubhavs and sattvikabhavas and, you know, all these symptoms of ecstatic symptoms and, you know, thrashing everything in his room like he didn't care about anything except, you know, Krishna. So yeah, let's see, so we're running out of time here. I guess that's the end of the story. I'll just read the Falashruti here. Any person who hears with faith and devotion about how Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, killed Putana, and who thus invests his hearing in such childhood pastimes of Krishna, certainly attains attachment for Govinda, the Supreme Original Person. Krishna ki jai. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Yeah. Right. So, any quick question? Yeah. Yeah, it's also on live stream. It's also on Krishna House Facebook. No? You didn't see it? Oh, I clicked go live. Anyways, it's on, yeah. It says that it's live. All right, did you have a question?
Yeah. Was there, did we know anything about like, the previous lives? It seems like she must have been like pretty biased.
Yeah, so what I've heard was that in the past time with Bali Maharaj and Vamanadeva, mm-hmm. that she was the sister of Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj was a demon and his sister was demoniac. And then, but when Vamanadeva came, Vamanadeva was very beautiful. So when she saw Vamanadeva, she thought, wow, this, he was a dwarf. So he looked like a little boy. She thought, he is so beautiful. I want to have a son like him. But then afterwards, when Bali Maharaj surrendered everything and Vamanadeva tied him up with the ropes of, you know, the serpent, then she thought, oh, that's horrible. You know, this, she wanted to kill him. So she had these mixed feelings that she wanted to have him as her son, but she also, she wanted to kill him. So then she took birth as Putana and she was able to relate with him briefly as a mother and then okay. try to kill him. So yeah, so it was a very mixed rasa vasa. Right, that's what I've heard. Okay, we got to wrap it up because everyone's coming for Dhamma Dharashtaka. Oh, really? Oh, no. All right. Well, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ur Premanandi. Okay, I don't know how to stop this. Mm-hmm. Are you still?